Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Mark Anthony, who is the author of Evidence of Eternity, Communicating with Spirits and Proof of the Afterlife. Mark Anthony is a unique medium because he's also an attorney, known as the psychic lawyer. And because he understands a lot of things in the legal world, he has brought a very interesting information and really enlightenment to the whole process of mediumship, which I think has been misunderstood. And Mark does a great job of explaining it via a frequency explanation that allows us to understand how this communication is really important, and also understand how there can be crossovers in the frequency leading to confusion during the communication. Just like if you were trying to communicate on a shortwave radio and kept getting different people in different areas breaking into the line of the conversation that you were having. So thank you, Mark, for joining us. Would you like to tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to write the book and become a medium?
Well, I was born into a family where mediumship, or rather psychic ability, runs. And what I mean by that is both on my mother's and my father's side of the family, for generations, there have been psychics and mediums. And Dr. Kolb, you and I were discussing some of this earlier about the scientific aspects of spirit communication. A lot of people look at it as hocus pocus and magic, but what we know from the study of genetics is that certain traits run in families. Intelligence, certain actually diseases, certain physical attributes. I mean, when it comes down to it, there's a reason that you look like your parents, and that's because of genetic traits. I believe, and this is one of the concepts that I wrote in Evidence of Eternity, is that psychic ability is a recessive trait. A recessive trait differs from a dominant trait. It's like left-handedness. People are born left-handed, and maybe 10% of the population is left-handed. So if you get two parents that are both left-handed, then the likelihood of one of their offspring being left-handed increases. So both my mother and father had these abilities, and I inherited them. How did I come to write Evidence of Eternity? It started with my first book, Never Letting Go, which is a guide on the journey through grief. And what happened, Dr. Kolb, is when I was on my nationwide book tour, people would ask me really profound and really deep questions about what is the nature of the other side? Is there a scientific basis for spirit communication? Is reincarnation real? Do animals have souls? What happens if somebody commits suicide? What happens to them after they leave this life? Among many other questions. And I started keeping track of what people wanted to know. And then I also have been studying mediumship as a science for years, because there's a reason why things happen. Nothing just spontaneously or magically happens. There is a delivery system, a logical and scientific explanation for everything. We may not know what it is at this point in time, but eventually our technology will evolve to the point where we can identify it. So in Evidence of Eternity, I decided to take the fear and the superstition away from spirit communication and explain it on the basis of sound scientific principles, theoretical physics, human physiology, and evidence.
And I think that's very important right now. I really liked your explanation in the book of how certain things that happen during a lifetime, like losing a brother and then maybe losing people later on in life, but not properly processing that grief, can turn somebody into a criminal or someone who appears to have no empathy or anything. Would you like to tell the story about, I won't give away who it is, but the story you told in Evidence of Eternity that led to, you know, one of the greatest criminals of our time?
What I've seen in my work as a psychic medium and as a criminal defense attorney is that grief leads to crime, which leads to grief. And this is one of my signature theories, if you will. And in my criminal law practice, I started seeing this over and over again. And what I mean by that is, in the early developmental stages of a person's life, either in childhood or perhaps in their teen years or maybe even in their early 20s, there will be the death of a significant person, or maybe even more than one significant person. It could even be, for a younger person, a younger child, the death of a beloved pet. And then that death is not properly dealt with. You know, Dr. Kolb, not everybody comes from families, I know you know this, where, okay, there's a death in the family, let's sit around now and let's discuss it and let's help each other and let's go to counseling and let's deal with it in healthy means. In my criminal practice, I saw a lot of broken families, and people were, you know, if there were parents, they were hardly a role model. You know, when they weren't sober, they were usually doing something illegal. And this attitude of, dude, don't think about it, or here, smoke this, drink this, snort this. And you can't outrun grief. You can't outmaneuver it. You can't do enough drugs to get away from it. You can't drink enough. You can't have enough sex to numb what you're feeling to it. And so when grief is not properly dealt with, that grief can then lead the person to addictions, impulsive behaviors, predatorial behaviors, anger and rage. So the grief leads to crime, which then leads that person to inflict grief upon other people. DUI, manslaughter, drunk driving and killing somebody. Most people that get drunk and get behind the wheel of a car don't intend to kill somebody. In fact, most of them don't. But the fact that they're getting behind the wheel of the car is a very dangerous and irresponsible behavior. So many people that steal things. I've represented the wealthy people who stole things, and I start talking to them and realize they were acting out because they hadn't dealt with the death of a loved one when they were children. So what we have to do is interrupt that cycle of grief, crime, grief. And when there is the death of a sibling or somebody close, a parent or a grandparent or you know, a close friend, we need to find out what the child knows about death, what the child is feeling. Let the child explain and express him or herself. And there's nothing wrong with taking your child to counseling, maybe in a group setting or in one-on-one, because if grief is not properly dealt with, it's going to emerge in other ways, which can then turn that person into, I don't like using this word, but occasionally it happens, a monster.
Yeah, it's almost like if the grief is not properly dealt with, there's a hardening of the heart. It's like that heart energy is suppressed.
Maybe as
a mechanism to prevent any other deaths from causing that deepness of hurtfulness.
I believe that that's absolutely true. On a psychological and on a spiritual level, I like what you said, the deepening of the heart. Well, it's like ignoring cancer. Oh, well, you know, I've got lung cancer. I'll just ignore it and it will go away. Well, guess what?
That's not likely.
Not likely.
That's right. And just to go back to the example in your book, maybe you can tell it better than I can, but there was a child that lost a brother, I believe, and then lost two other people.
I don't want to give away the spoiler. I think the grief, crime, grief explanation does explain that for people.
Well, we'll tell them to read the book to find out who the notorious criminal was. How's that?
Recently there was a guy that wrote a book in England about who the real Jack the Ripper was. I think his name was Aaron Kosminski, something like that. And I was asked to comment upon it on a number of shows, and so I did my research, and I looked into the background of all the likely candidates. And at the time, the police in London, this was their prime suspect. And now, supposedly, there's DNA evidence which connects some of the blood and tissue samples on one of the victims' pieces of clothing. I think it was a scarf to the great, 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 great nieces of this particular suspect. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this gentleman, he had all the signs and symptoms. I think mm-hmm. in today's terms, he would have been diagnosed as a schizophrenia, but he came mm-hmm. from a very bad, broken home. And you see that a lot in a lot of patterns. A lot of people that commit vicious acts tend to come from very unstable backgrounds. That doesn't mean everyone does, because I've met a number of sociopaths and killers that came from what seemed to be model families. But
yeah, Ted Bundy
for the
was
most
one.
Part, yeah, Ted Bundy. I mean, yeah, Ted Bundy. Jeffrey Dahmer was another one.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, and his name escapes me at the moment. The mass killer who shot all his all these people on a college campus recently because girls didn't like him, and he made those YouTube
right,
videos
yeah.
of himself. When his parents heard on the news of the shooting, they immediately mm-hmm. knew it was their son.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, yeah, they knew it. They just knew it.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's amazing what, because I observed you over at the Phoenix and Dragon last week, and several of the people that you called on had lost children, which of course everybody knows that's the hardest of all, is when a child dies, especially suddenly. And it's amazing what shifts occurred in the people after the spirit communication with the child. I mean, it's just incredible.
I
see why you do the work you do.
It is such an honor, and it's very humbling to have inherited this ability. And, Dr. Culp, the way I look at it is that I'm the custodian of this ability.
Mm-hmm.
I've been around some mediums that act like, look at me, I've got superpowers. And well, I know a lot of football players that can do things I can't do, and a lot of athletes and musicians and things that mm-hmm. can do things I can't do. We all have differing abilities. And
mm-hmm.
I love the work that I do because when I'm conducting a reading where I'm able to bring through a spirit of a child that a parent has lost, and when I see some of the pain come out of that parent's eyes,
mm-hmm.
it is so rewarding. And I do go into great depth in Evidence of Eternity about the loss of a child. It is without a doubt mm-hmm. the most excruciating and painful loss. I'm sure in your medical practice you've dealt with many parents who've lost children. And
yes, I have.
Yeah, and they don't recover from it. At best, you learn to live with it. You learn to live with
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, I was the one that had to tell the parents their child had died in a car wreck, and I was a trauma surgeon for many years.
Oh, good Lord.
Covered six emergency rooms, so yeah. It is very, very difficult.
That. Wow,
yeah.
that takes...
And the sudden death. I mean, when a child has cancer, it's bad enough, but they do have some time to adjust to it. You know, people, other than sometimes with brain cancer, especially with the drugs we have now, children usually survive for even a few years. And there's, as you know, that's an important time to adjust. But a car wreck, especially when the parent was driving, you can imagine the guilt.
Oh, the survivor guilt is so terrible. You know, I was raised in the Catholic faith, and I'd even considered becoming a priest. That was a big consideration. And one of the guys I grew up with, we're still really good friends. He's Jewish, and he's so funny. He said, because we Jews invented guilt, but you Catholics really perfected it.
That's right.
And so,
how
so,
true.
So I understand guilt, and when you see parents, like you just described, the parent was driving and an accident, and maybe they didn't even cause the accident. Maybe there was a blowout or a truck hit them or whatever.
Yeah.
Yet when a parent loses a child, whether or not they were at fault, there's always guilt and regrets. And then, of course,
mm-hmm.
survivor guilt, and that's another topic I go into in great detail
mm-hmm.
in my new book, Evidence of Eternity. Because survivor guilt can just destroy somebody. It can lead to like a spiritual cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, evidence of eternity does present all sorts of really wonderful, I guess, explanations for things. And one of the things that I was a little surprised at was the detail in which our pets understand things. I mean, the pets can even tell you what time something occurred at. Isn't that amazing?
It's startling because
who would think?
What it appears is that animals. I don't believe in the concept of dumb animals. You know, and you don't really hear that too much anymore. But you know, you used to hear about dumb animals, but they're not dumb. They simply manifest in intelligence differently than human beings do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this human arrogance that animals don't have souls. Well, I remember about 15 years ago, I encountered my first giraffe in a one-on-one, and the giraffe came up to me, and I was able to feed her, and I was holding up some lettuce and other goodies mm-hmm. that they like, and they got this real long tongue, But when that beautiful creature looked at me with those giant dark eyes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I just melted. I saw so much mm-hmm. love, and it dawned on me at that time, this being has a soul. And mm-hmm. anyone that says that animals don't have souls haven't spent any time around animals. You look mm-hmm. in the eyes of a creature that loves you, be it a dog or cat or a horse,
mm-hmm.
they definitely have souls, and they understand things a lot more in depth and intensely than we think we do. And as right. you indicated, I recall, or rather I tell a story in evidence about a police officer and his canine, and the dog even gave the time something happened. And I don't want to give away the story because it was so intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just give the beginning. I was doing a reading in Philadelphia at a bookstore, at a Barnes & Noble. There was mm-hmm. about 100 people there. And all of a sudden, I said, there's someone coming through. And I said, this is not a human. This is a dog. This is a really big dog. And it looks like a German Shepherd, and it's got a real black muzzle. And all of a sudden, this guy on the front row just starts shaking and tears coming out of his eyes. And he was like this mm-hmm. Real burly, rough-and-tumble guy. And he said, that's Ajax. I'm a canine. Mm-hmm. I'm a police officer. And the fascinating thing about Ajax is he wasn't just a police dog. He was one of those type of dogs that they brought to hunt down Osama bin Laden. I mean, this was a highly sophisticated, trained dog. And this dog mm-hmm. communicated more clearly than some human spirits do. It was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Right. Very evolved dog. Definitely.
Very much so. It's not unusual in readings for pets to come through. I think last week I did a reading where I had 10 people, 2 dogs, and a cat come through. It was amazing.
Right, yeah. I had a friend call me one time all upset because her cat, which was a house cat, had never been outside, but really didn't go outside, got out the door and then was missing. And I tuned in and I said, no, the cat's gone. You know, the cat's no longer on the earth plane. And then she called me up about 6 months later saying that she went outside and there was this tiny little kitten in her driveway that looked exactly like the cat that she lost. And the cat came in and did all these different behaviors exactly like the cat that she lost, you know, wouldn't eat certain food, would only sit certain places. And so she believed that the cat came back as a kitten.
And, you know, it's easy to scoff at something like that, but when you're a lawyer that sees dead people, I have to keep an open mind.
Right. Well, I think the cat really wanted to get back to her, so it reincarnated close by, and then the little kitten ended up in her driveway.
And
I think it's totally possible.
It's entirely possible. Well, I mean, how many of us have encountered a person that you've never met before, at least in this life, and they just seem so incredibly familiar? And that person feels the same way. We all have.
Right.
And
you know their likes and dislikes, you know their quirks. You know if they're honest or dishonest. You know, I mean, you know all sorts of things about their character, and there's no way that you would know that except that you remember it.
And that person's feeling the same way about you, and it's like,
right.
Well, I was at a spiritual retreat, and there's this woman there, and we just connected like that. But the weird thing was, it wasn't like an emotional or it wasn't a physical attraction. I said, "You feel like my sister," and she said, "You feel like my brother." And
right.
We sat there and we talked, and we like would talk, and the instructor goes, "Would you two cool it with your past life regression and join the rest of the class?" And everyone started laughing, and they're
right,
like, "Yeah, these two obviously knew each other in a prior life." And
right.
And
yeah.
We've all encountered folks like that, and I don't write that off. You know, I think spiritual situational awareness is very important. You need to be open to spiritual guidance and to the messages and information that you receive from the unseen
mm-hmm.
world around us. And
right.
sometimes it comes in the form of, I think I went through a lifetime with that person before.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly true that on the planet today, more people believe in reincarnation than don't believe in reincarnation. So, you know, if it was a popularity contest, it probably would win out, at least now.
Well,
so,
it makes sense. I mean, from a scientific standpoint, there are times when religion and, or rather, faith and science do coincide. All too often,
mm-hmm.
it seems like the people of faith are in one camp and the people of science are in another, and there's a moat between
right.
the two
mm-hmm.
castles, and I think that there really should be a bridge, because every belief system teaches that the spirit, the soul, if you will, pre-exists the body, comes into
mm-hmm.
the body. When the body's no longer functioning, the spirit moves on. And the
right.
second law of thermodynamics teaches us that energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. I see that as they're saying the same thing.
They are. That's absolutely true. And I think that with what's happening right now, with this energy that's coming in from the galactic center, that more and more people are opening up to being able to do spirit communication, or at least realize that, like, if you're about to turn down a dark alley and you hear no as a strong thought in your mind, that maybe your dead relatives or your guardian angels or your guides are trying to prevent something bad from happening. You know, I think that this communication is going to get stronger and stronger.
And being open to it, then when you have the message come to you, accepting it and giving yourself permission to have the intuitive or the psychic experience or whatever label you want to put on it. It's
mm-hmm.
funny because when I talk to groups of people, I always say, all right, I want all the women to raise your hand because I know you all have women's intuition. Of course, the women raise their hands. Now, if
mm-hmm.
I pose the same question to men and I say intuition, they're not going to raise their hands because intuition, that's a woman's thing. But I say, all right, how many guys have gut instinct? Oof, the hands all go up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Harrison
right.
Ford, Indiana Jones, you know,
yeah.
has gut instinct. Rocky Balboa. And when I talk to police officers and to military personnel, every one of these guys tells me, if I didn't rely on my instinct and my gut feeling, I'd be dead. And what they're telling me is, they have learned to trust what you and I would refer to as intuition or psychic ability. Everybody
right.
has it in varying degree. And when you
mm-hmm.
when you trust it and then give yourself permission to accept it, you're going to find that it's a wonderful guide, not only in interpersonal relationships, but also in business.
Mm-hmm.
It can really
yeah.
help you a lot in the business world.
Yeah, the Japanese have a term for it, right? Kara
feng shui?
Or something like
no,
that.
I feng shui is where you put the chairs. No.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So some of the other topics that you want to go over, some of the other topics that you discuss in Evidence for Eternity?
What I've done with Evidence of Eternity is I've written a book that brings spirit communication into the 21st century. And with all due respect and love to all my fellow mediums, they're not writing or they haven't written books like this. And that's why this one's different, because and what they're writing about is good. I mean, love and forgiveness and understanding some of the messages that come through. Very, very important stuff. And I certainly send love and light to all them. But our understanding of spirit communication is mired in the Victorian era, because when spiritualism as a belief system, the belief that you can communicate with discarnate intelligence, in other words, mediumship, you can communicate with spirits through a medium, started in the in Britain and in the United States around the 1850s, 1860s. The terminology, the understanding, the phraseology of it rose at that same time, yet it has stayed there. Now we live in the Internet age. Our understanding of telecommunications, of energy transfer, of frequency, of string theory, that there's not just a universe, but there are multiverses, has literally come light years. And drawing upon those theories and those scientific discoveries, along with near-death experience and survival of consciousness studies, and my own studying, which has taken decades, I've brought spirit communication up to the Internet and into the Internet age, into the 21st century, and I've developed new terms and concepts to describe those. And one of those, for Chapter 1, is spiritual situational awareness. And we were just talking about that a little bit ago. Every police officer, every military soldier, marine, sailor that I know talks about situational awareness. That's where you are aware of what's happening all around you at any one time. Let me tell you something. A cop or a soldier that walks into a war zone or, you know, a hot spot that's not paying attention isn't going to be here very long.
It's
sort of I read a study one time that women are better at multitasking than men, because women have a spherical attention span. And it seems to be over centuries of, and this might be changing now, but men tend to be very focused, very focused on one thing. And we have tunnel vision. And women, maybe because they're taking care of kids, they're cooking, they're mending, they're doing this, they're running a household, or, you know, think about it. A mom is not just a mother, but she's a travel agent, an accountant, a meal planner, you know, a paramedic. Right. I mean, there's all these multitude of things, and women have adapted over the centuries to paying attention to many things at one time. Police officers, military, have to acquire that skill to be able to pay attention to several things at once. So I realized that on a spiritual level, spiritual situational awareness is when you are sensitive to the messages you're receiving from spirits, from your guides, angels, from God, and you're sensitive enough to pay attention to that. And when you are, that's where what you were talking about earlier, Dr. Kolb, do I walk down the street and all of a sudden you feel that voice inside of you say, no, don't do that.
Right.
And that's spiritual situational awareness. Or I don't like that person around my child.
Right, yeah.
You know, go with those feelings. Other terms of develop is interdimensional communication. What I do as a medium is, and people call it mediumship, and of course we use the term, but what we're really doing is interdimensional communication.
Right.
The material world dimension, the world we exist in, is one dimension. The other side is another dimension, and apparently there are multiple dimensions beyond that. The easiest way to understand it is to think of AM radio versus FM radio. Think of our world as AM radio. We use frequency, we use energy, we use vibration, but it's at a lower frequency. The other side is FM radio. It's the enhanced sound quality, okay? So it uses a more rapid, it's frequency modulation, it's a higher frequency. Mm-hmm. Well, occasionally the two overlap. And FM exists, it coincides with AM. Generally, they don't overlap, but oftentimes they do. And in spirit communication, we are having interdimensional communication because now the AM radio of our world is overlapping with the FM frequency of the other side. And I think that that's probably the easiest way to understand it, because we've all been driving down the road listening to our favorite radio station, and all of a sudden another station overlaps it.
Right.
And that's what happens in spirit communication.
And then on the other side, in the FM world, not all spirits reside at the same frequency level.
Not at all. Some spirits are at 89.5, and others, in the white light, are at 107.9.
That's right.
It's like, welcome to the white light of 107.9. You know, but...
But that is important to know, because, you know, when you start dealing with interdimensional communication, you can't just assume that everything you're hearing is light and love, you know. You can hear other things as well, so you have to learn, you know, you have to learn to kind of discern what you're listening to.
Well, I know a lot of mediums that talk about encountering negative energies and that sort of thing. I don't have that problem or that issue, but I also don't jump to conclusions. I've been on a lot of paranormal investigations, and it's really fascinating. And for all the listeners, if you ever get a chance to go on a ghost hunt, totally do it. It's a lot of fun. I don't know, though, why they always have to sit in the dark. And it's funny on television, they show the night vision goggles, and all of a sudden they start shaking the camera around. Everyone screams, demons, demons. And I watch them, and it's like, well, I'm not seeing any demons. We have to be careful about assuming something's negative, because spirits are pure energy. And when their energy field interfaces with ours, they're an electrical field of sorts, and we have an electrical field. That's not woo-hoo. I mean, our nerves have electricity running through them. Our brain and heart have electrical fields. When their energy field interacts with ours, we get cold chills and tingles, because that's a physiological response. It's an electrical response. Yet it's the same response we get when we're afraid and the flight or fight response is invoked. So therefore, when you encounter and you get the cold chills and all that, people immediately assume this is negative, this is bad. And I've been in many paranormal investigations where people start feeling that, and the electronic devices that they measure frequency and the EVP and K2 meters and all that start going off. And I'll say, and they're like, oh, my God, it's negative, it's evil. Like one time, they had this, you could hear voices coming through from the other side, and it's like, it's demon. I said, no, I heard Stephen. You know, and someone else said, I thought it said Stephen, too. And they're like, no, it's demon. And I said, well, wait a second, it's a grandfather. And I started describing who it was, and one of the people there said, that was my grandfather. His name was Stephen, and he died. And so we've got to be careful about jumping to conclusions that everything we don't understand is somehow negative.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's true. So you were talking in the book about suicide and homicide. Would you like to go into that a little bit? Because those are questions people have about what happens after those particular things at this level.
Suicide is such a complicated behavior, and it is looked upon as like the worst thing somebody can do. All the religions, Christianity, Islam, say if you commit suicide, you're going right to hell. Judaism, you know, they're really down on it. Even the normally tolerant Buddhists have very, very strong and almost angry things to say about suicide. But it's more than just self-inflicted homicide. It's a complex behavior which affects people both on this side and the other side. But I also believe, Dr. Kolb, that there is not a one-size-fits-all. In other words, in Christianity, if you commit suicide, you are going to hell. Yet God, being such a complex and infinite being, takes into account so many different factors. I mean, you can't tell me from a karmic standpoint that somebody who commits suicide as a form of revenge to really inflict guilt and pain upon someone is going to be treated the same as someone who is in absolute agony being eaten alive with cancer, and there's absolutely no hope for that person, and they take a morphine overdose. Those are so completely different. And there is no one size fits all karmically. And also, we have to look at what's going on inside the psyche of a suicidal person. And what psychologists and psychiatrists have concluded is that the reason the vast majority of people commit suicide is because their reality in their perception is so horrific and so hellish and so terrible and so inescapable that the only alternative for them is cessation of consciousness. And when Robin Williams committed suicide last year, that really brought this discussion to the forefront. I was on CBS television in Houston. We did a whole special on suicide and Robin Williams. And it really hurt people, because who didn't love Robin Williams? I mean, back from when he was Mork and Mindy through he was Peter Pan and Hook, and he was the genie in Aladdin and Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, we could go on and on all day, the beloved characters that he created. But he was in such a hellish reality, grappling with depression and drug addiction, and then he found out he had Parkinson's, and there were so many psychological problems going on with him that he believed he was in a hellish reality that of which there was no escape. And 2 weeks ago, I conducted a reading for a woman whose son came through and immediately felt a choking sensation. And she said, well, my son hung himself. And I said, he did not do this out of malice or anger. She said, that doesn't make sense. I said, well, hold on. He said that he reemerged. He reemerged in that his suicide was a logical and rational act. And she said, really? And I said, now he showed me an image of a young girl, a young woman, and how he wanted to kill her. And she said, oh my gosh. She said that when my son committed suicide, I read his diary and saw these pictures, and he kept talking about his girlfriend, the one you just described, whom he wanted to rape and murder. And so what was going on with him is he was psychotic. And she said that the psychoses would overtake him, and then occasionally the sweet boy that she raised would emerge. Now, 150, 200 years ago, that would be demonic possession. But with this, there was an actual organic problem in his brain. And he said, and then the quote came through, a man has no greater love for a friend than to lay down his life for a friend. He said, please think of this as a heroic act. And his mother just broke down and said, I never thought of it that way. And she said, I always thought my son was going to be a mass murderer and a killer. And in this specific instance, he emerged and realized, if I did not take my own life, I will kill this girl and I will kill other people. Right. Now, for the benefit of the listeners, I am not in any shape, form, or fashion, under any circumstances, advocating suicide. This was a highly unique and specific case study. And and please, if anyone out there is so depressed that they're contemplating suicide, or if you or a family member it seems to be suicidal, please call the suicide prevention hotlines. They're active 24/7. There are caring, trained professionals who are there to help you, because you don't have to go through this alone. And no matter how bad you are feeling, there is somebody there to help you. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that.
That's very interesting. But he had a kind of a period of where he was very lucid, and then had this logical.
Yes,
which was really true. If there was no treatment for his condition,
there was no treatment, and his mother said he was getting worse and worse, and she was indicating that with his psychotic behavior, the doctor said it was hopeless. You know, they would give him drugs, he wouldn't take them, and he emerged lucid, and he came to the decision that I've got to put a stop to this, or what I'm going to do is going to be horrible. And the way he described it, he said that it was as if there was a vampire inside of him that he could no longer control.
Well, he probably made the right decision.
Sadly, there is a morbid logic to what he did, but once again, you know, I don't condone or advocate that behavior, but it was a very touching and a very overwhelming reading.
So when you brought through people who have committed homicide, what do they have to say for themselves?
Once again, it's all very, very case by case. But in my book, Never Letting Go, I talked about a serial killer who murdered a little boy. And it was one of the most gripping readings I've done. I mean, I've done a lot of really intense ones, but this one, it stood out in my mind so much, I had to write about it. And when little boy came through, he was like light and bright and beautiful and wonderful. And then this other energy came through that was definitely on a different frequency. So the boy was on 107.9, and this guy was on like the lowest, lowest frequency. But he was no longer insane. He explained, the spirit explained that when he was alive, he said it was like there was static in my head and this compulsion and these sick sexual desires and this aggression. And now on the other side, he's free of that, but he has to atone for it. And he's not in an archetypical hell, you know, with a guy with a pitchfork sticking him and on hot coals, but it's a karmic thing, and he realizes the horror that he inflicted. And the really weird thing, Dr. Kolb, is during that reading he said, I'm sorry for what I did to your son and three other boys. And then after the reading, the client, she said, you know that thing you said about three other boys? I said, I think I recall that. Yeah, I did say that, or that came through. And she said, at the scene of my son's murder, there were hair and tissue samples that did not match my son and did not match the killer. And nobody knows this. The police said this to me behind the scenes, is they believed that this guy had murdered other children, but they could never link him to anything.
Right.
And
yeah, especially if he put the bodies in the same vehicle or something. There would be hair evidence there.
That guy was about as evil as they come.
Very interesting. Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
I would. If you want to find out more about booking a reading with me and about my new book, Evidence of Eternity, my website is evidenceofeternity.com. And for people who are coping with the loss of a loved one, there's a section on my website called Grief Management, and there's many resources there, coping techniques, prayers, affirmations, an in-depth explanation on different religions called the immortality of the soul. Then, of course, you can find out about a one-on-one session with me. And also, if you go to my calendar of events, it'll show you the venues that I'm going to be at. I'm currently on a book tour. I will be getting to as many cities in the U.S. as I can. I've just been completely humbled by the immense success of Evidence of Eternity. It's turned into a major bestseller. It's been number one on the spiritual, the astral projection, the reincarnation, the religion bestseller list, and it just keeps going. And all I can say to everyone, to all the readers, is thank you so much. You honor me.
Well, we've got a few more minutes. Is there any other words of wisdom you would like to give our audience before we go off?
I would say that if I had a message, or if I have a message in this life, that spirit communication is not only a reality, there's nothing to be afraid of it, and what it helps us understand is that God exists, heaven, the other side exists, our soul is truly an immortal living spirit. We can communicate with these spirits, and that is a gift that God has given to all of us, and that one day we will be reunited with our loved ones, both human and animal, in the light that is God.
That's a beautiful message. I also think that, at least from my personal experience, I've lost both my parents, and I've had the opportunity to have spirit communication from them during times of great danger. And I think that there are people on the other side who are assigned to you that are familiar to you, like your parents or your relatives, that do watch over you.
Absolutely.
In times
of that.
Trouble or sickness or danger. And so at least my experience is that I believe that they're here to help us.
They are. And both on this side and the other side, we all have the potential to be instruments of God's will. And the concept of a guardian angel or of a loving, familiar spirit, like a parent or a friend or a relative, can come through. In fact, in Chapter 1 of Evidence of Eternity, I go into that in great depth.
Yeah, well, I would like to encourage everybody to, you know, to read Evidence of Eternity, because there's a lot of great information in it, and through Mark's experience of many, many readings, I think a kind of a overview of this topic evolves out that is quite interesting, even for someone like myself, who I've been doing this radio show for 18 years, and I've talked to everybody about all sorts of topics, but I think this book truly is one that I would recommend to everybody listening. So thank you so much for joining us, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb, and I hope to see you on my next trip to Atlanta on May 20th and 21st.
Love to see you then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. God bless.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, his new book, Evidence of Eternity. Join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.